Stick and Axe Show. That's Mike. I'm Adam. This week on the show, we have PGA Tour agronomist Thomas Bassus on the show. Plus, we give Mike Ryan a personality test, and it goes exactly as you would anticipate it going. And we tell the story of 2004 U.S. Open. It's a jam-packed show, and it starts right now.
This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, everybody, welcome in to the Stick and Hack Show. I'm your host, Adam Grubb, the hack. That's Mike Ryan, the stick. Mike, how are you?
Super.
Great.
How's it going, buddy?
It's really good. Thank you.
Good.
Very, very good. I'm still on the, I'm still getting a lot of fanfare from my club championship flight winner. I had to cancel one, but I've been in two parades so far.
Ooh.
Yeah. Very local parade.
Socially distanced parade?
Socially distanced local in my house.
Okay. Cool.
Stick and Axe Show, the most sophisticated golf show in the free world from the greatest golf club in the world without the course, presented by Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com and use the code STICKANDHACK for 20% off their products and free shipping. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Stick and Hack Show. Guest today is Thomas Bassus. He's a PGA Tour agronomist. He's in charge of grass.
Agronomist.
Thank you. Agronomist.
Good God.
That's not a word I've ever said in my life, Mike, until 8 seconds ago.
It's not that hard.
Agronomist.
Agronomist.
All right. What does that mean? I guess we'll find out. Yeah, he's the Thomas is a superintendent by...
Oh, go ahead. Ask him.
I will. Maybe we'll do that.
That'd be a good question.
What does that mean? Thomas is superintendent by trade, and now works as the competition agronomist for the PGA Tour. He works with superintendents at courses that are hosting PGA events, PGA Tour, Korn Ferry, et cetera, to make sure they're meeting the tour standards for conditioning of the course. And this is the second episode in a row where we're talking about course conditions in the PGA Tour. And the reason being is because it's something that most people don't even realize is a major importance, not just for the PGA Tour, but for the USGA and for golf in general. There's an entire curriculum of study that people go through to get to this point to where they are at the top of their game. And it starts really at the grass level, literally and figuratively.
I've been waiting all day for that one.
How'd I do?
Terrible.
Okay. What the hell is I talking about? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Thomas is on the show, and we're excited for him, as well as we've got an incredible story that on first up here, Mike. Now, this is one of those stories that you probably heard rumblings of back in the day, and it is one of the most famous stories when it comes to golf major disasters, and the course was to blame. So we talk all the time about blow-ups in golf and the tour and these people, but the course was to blame, and in some cases we all blame the course at some point in our round, right?
Yeah.
That the greens are too fast or that the rough's too thick or whatever the case may be. And in my case, it's that the fairways are not wide enough, whatever, right? People are complaining about the bunkers. Everybody complains about a course at some point. But the 2004 U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club is by far the most famous story of a golf course gone bad in a major tournament. Now, do you remember? I mean, I didn't really watch golf at that time. Do you remember how big of a deal this was?
Yeah, for sure. I remember when it happened.
So the Shinnecock Hills Golf Club is a links-style golf club. It's in Southampton, Long Island, New York, right between, I don't know where it's between. Doesn't matter. Look at a map.
It's in Long Island.
Yeah, great.
That's all that matters.
Shinnecock Hills believed to be the oldest incorporated golf club in the United States, 1891. It has the oldest golf club in the U.S., 1892, and the first American golf club to admit women members, which it did from the very start.
That's an interesting tidbit. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It also is the only golf course to host the U.S. Open in three different centuries.
Also did not know that. That's awesome. That's actually fascinating to me.
It is. We should probably stop the show right now.
That's it. We've peaked.
There's nothing.
We peaked early.
Nothing better. 4 minutes in. Shinnecock Hills, founding member of the United States Golf Association, has hosted several important events, notably five U.S. Opens. Most recently, the 2018 Open, won by Brooks, and it hosts its sixth in 2026, and it was recently added to the National Register of Historic Places in 2000. I say all that, Mike, because the history and the heritage of that course and of that club and of the U.S. Open, the national championship in golf, is on stage every single year, and every year specifically since 2004, they talk about the course conditions of the U.S. Open and how important it is. It's typically the toughest course conditions of any major and of any tournament of the year.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
They want, the USGA wants it to be a true challenge for anyone that plays that tournament. They want it to be as hard as possible. They want a par score to mean something.
Right.
So if you make a par, you played that hole correctly, you played it well, you hit good golf shots to actually make that score. So
most majors and most golf tournaments, the guys are 15 to 20 under when it's all said and done as a winner. And the U.S. Open traditionally is not that way. In fact, there's only been several that have been in that range.
Double digit under par. Well, yeah, traditionally, but I would say in the last few years that hasn't necessarily held true. That's started to get and
Aaron Hills is a couple years ago.
And it kind of goes in, it starts to go into the idea of how far guys are hitting it now. It started to make it a little more difficult for them to even make that a challenge, but they're not shy about growing the rough up,
right?
Firming out the fairways, firming out the greens, making them run real fast.
Well, in 2004, it was arguably the hardest it's ever been in the history of the U.S. Open, but it wasn't on purpose. It was the 104th U.S. Open held in the middle of June at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club in New York. Retief Goosen, a name we haven't heard in many years.
Yes.
Won his
Champions Tour. He's on the Champions Tour now, I think.
Well, that's not something I watch regularly. Maybe I should. Won his second U.S. Open title, two strokes ahead of runner-up Phil Mickelson, who was also the reigning Masters champion of that year. So here was the controversy around it. The tournament has always been famed for its tough conditions. It's always been hard. Par is the desired winning score. It got out of hand in 2004. Six under par, with only six people under par leading after 36 holes.
Yep.
It was very, very difficult, and then it got worse. As the weekend went on, tournament officials attempted to toughen the course to bring the players back to par. So the first couple of days, they're like, oh, man, people are six under par now.
Yep.
This could get us down in that 15 range. Let's toughen up the course a little bit. It wasn't watered before Saturday and was more difficult for the third round. It wasn't watered again prior to Sunday's play. It was absolutely brutal. No player broke par in the final round, and the average score, let me repeat that. No player broke par in the final round, and the average score for the day was 79.
Yep. It was rough that day.
Nine over par. Ernie Els, who was playing in the final group, shot an 80.
Yeah.
And then quit the game.
He probably felt like it at the end of it.
It got so bad that on the seventh hole became almost unplayable. So the green was double cut and rolled on the Friday evening. It was rolled the next morning, and it got worse as the weekend went on. Players struggled to keep their balls on the green with their tee shots, chipping, putting. Yep. It was impossible.
Yeah.
The first group on Sunday, David Toms and J.J. Henry, both made triple bogeys on the seventh hole.
Yeah.
The next group had a double and a triple. So the first two groups to go through hole seven were like 13 over combined, which is insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, there's a sadistic part of me that
loved it,
but being realistic, you can't have a tournament. You can't have a whole play that way.
No.
Especially in an open. No. So,
and Retief Goosen ended up winning. He won the title 4 under par. Mickelson was in second at 2 under par.
Yep.
They were the only men under par. Although there have been only 4 U.S. Opens since 2004 with lower winning scores. You know, I tell you, thinking about that, and the USGA got absolutely grilled and drilled for that performance. They were watering the greens in between groups on Sunday to try to soften them and slow them down because they were, I mean, you hear this putting on glass. That's how it was.
Yeah.
And it got out of hand. And then the next couple years, they were under the microscope for their course conditions. And you're right, the sadistic part in the weekend hack, watching them shoot 79 or 80, hilarious.
Yeah,
finally, right? It's like watching an NBA player just miss free throws time after time. After a while, you're like, oh, this is pretty funny to watch.
Yeah,
right.
Watching Shaq shoot free throws was always entertaining to me.
Yes, indeed. And that's what this was like. It all started when if I have this right, because first of all, let me back up.
Yep.
Can you explain, and I know I'm going to show my ignorance here and my denseness. I don't care. I'm an idiot. The PGA, the USGA, and the RNN
RNA.
RNA.
Yep.
Okay. Point one for you.
Thank you.
RNA, USGA, and PGA, and the PGA Tour.
Yep.
Tell me what those all mean and the difference between all of them.
Oh,
without the smirk and without the annoyed, frustrated look, if you don't mind.
So, all right. So the USGA and the RNA are similar organizations. So they oversee the rules of golf, basically the rules of golf. They govern that. There are also a couple tournaments that they own, I guess, is the best way to explain it. So the U.S. Open is USGA's domain. The British Open, or the Open, is the RNA.
Okay.
Those are their championships that they put on. The PGA Tour is obviously the professional tour in the U.S.
Okay.
So they run the week-to-week tournaments that we see professional golfers playing in. Those are governed by the PGA Tour.
So that's like the MLB, the NBA, NFL. That's
correct.
Their own league.
Correct.
And they have their own commissioner.
Correct. Jay Monahan.
Okay.
Yes.
Jay Monahan. Got it.
And then...
So he's like the Adam Silver.
Yes.
Got it. I'm with you.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm 100% in.
All right. Am I going slow enough for you?
Oh, God. I specifically told you not to do that. Now I don't even care. I don't even care.
Poke the bear.
I've lost interest in it. I've lost interest in my own question. if you want to figure out the difference, I guess you'll have to look it up yourself.
There's people. A thing called Google.
Yeah, look
Just
it up.
Just do that.
That's fine. It's let's fine. Bring in our guest and let's get off this train of negativity that you've put us on. Guest today, Thomas Bastis, PGA Tour agronomist.
Agronomist.
Thomas, welcome. I will not.
Thomas,
welcome into the Stick and Hack show. How are you, sir?
Thank you.
All right. You enjoy
interesting segue there.
Well, I don't know how else to get out of that, to be honest with you. That's the most professional way I can get out of that. Thomas, tell us, first of all, what you do and what an agronomist is. And let's start there with that conversation. This is our second episode in a row where we're talking about the course and those that are involved in the course management and maintenance through the PGA Tour. It's a fascinating topic that most people don't know about. Tell us a bit about your job and your career.
Sure. You want the stick version or the hack version?
Well, I think we've proven that the only version is the stick version for this show.
That's correct.
Because the hack versions don't get a lot of love.
Okay. Well, you know, actually I get asked that question a lot. I drive around the golf course. I have this big sticker on the front that says agronomy or agronomist, and without fail, I get at least five questions a tournament that ask, what is that? And pronounce it just as good as any of it. As you can figure, you know, we're there on the golf course to assist the golf course in anything that's green, grass, moving trees, plants, everything towards I call it the show. So it can be, a lot of things. It can be not a lot of things. It just depends on the golf course. It depends on the weather. But in essence, we're there to help lead the tournament through conditioning towards the final putt on Sunday.
So
turf grass insurance agent.
Oh, that's good. That's cool.
Like that.
Yeah, turf grass insurance agent.
A lot.
All right, so you heard the story about the 2004 U.S. Open. I'm sure you were around. You were in the space at that point. You've had a great, long, storied career. Are there other stories like 2004 U.S. Open that most people don't know because they're not on that world stage and that center stage of the U.S. Open where courses are lost in a tournament and all the behind the scenes of trying to keep that course together?
Well, I tell you, you know, a lot of what I do is in some instances can be coaching, especially when you're bringing a new course onto, into the PGA Tour. They've never hosted an event. Like I had one just recently up at, Old Greenwood in Lake Tahoe. And what you want to try to condition the superintendent is, you don't want to be number five. So you've got, let's start back in 1998 at the Olympic Club. So you got that one with Payne Stewart on the 18th hole. You've got, Shinnecock won. You've got St. Andrews, which was stopped because they had 40-mile-an-hour winds, and I think it was the British Open in 2015. Yeah. Shinnecock again. So you don't want to be number five because everyone remembers number five. You know, everyone remembers those. I mean, I just flipped off four of them. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that you don't go down that path. So I don't personally have any of those stories. I'm sure there are a few, we have a little bit different approach towards our tournament management.
Yeah, and it's something that most people don't even realize that there's this team that comes out ahead of time and works with the superintendents and works with those. And Chad Mark, who was on the show last time, he deals with a lot of people to try to make a lot of people happy. The competitors, the fans, the networks, the PGA, the USGA, the golf course ownership.
The Jack Factor.
The Jack Factor. That's Look right. who's listening to the Stick and Hack Show.
That's right.
That's a very stressful situation. Now, Mike, I'm going to, as we go through this mean looking stupid that we're doing on the show today, I'm going to ask a question that you don't want me to ask. You said specifically, this question is stupid. Remember that?
I do.
All right. So I'm going to ask it anyway because I'm confident in my own ability. All right, here we go.
All right.
So Thomas Bastis is on the show, PGA Tour agronomist, and here we go. Here's my question for you, Thomas. Explain the relationship Explain the relationship the PGA Tour has with the USGA and the host course for a tournament.
Wow. of high enough value to really answer that question. But it's not like I'm picking up the phone and calling them. We're aware of each other's space. It's kind of like,
so you have nothing to do with it.
Shaq knows Jordan. That's it. I don't know.
That is but true. All right, so you're right. All right, you're right.
There's no relationship.
Okay, you're right.
I wouldn't say that.
So except for like 1 week where to me, when there's a relationship, it's the U.S. Open. Like, so the PGA Tour and the USGA are involved with
Pebble Beach. Okay, so here we go. Recent example, Pebble Beach. We have two tournaments a year there. We have the Pure Insurance Champions Tour event. We have the AT&T. One in the spring, or I should say winter, because there was hail on the green last year. And then you had the U.S. Amateur in 2019, and then you had the U.S. Open. 18 and 19, somewhere in there. So we were basically sharing, and we don't necessarily dictate, their grass heights. Everyone's trying to just fit in. So there is a little bit of communication that has to happen. Maybe a lot more than I know, but, I worked the AT&T and you could see that, the USGA was bringing in some of the fairway lines. After that event, when we had our Champions Tour event, we had to pull the fairway lines back out. So it's just trying to create, if we know this is going to happen again, there is some communication that should go towards setup and what's it going to be like. And a lot of times we're there to kind of communicate to our players, hey, ahead of time, this is what you should expect. Communication.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. So, all right. So as I understand it, you work for the PGA Tour and your team are the players that are on that tour. And that's who you're trying to make happy and make sure that they're aware of, hey, these are the conditions. This is what you need to be aware of. This is what you need to expect and make sure that you're working with whoever you need to work with. To that they have a great experience at that course and that tournament is fair and just. Is that correct?
That you've got, yes.
Sounds
good.
See?
Yeah.
That's good.
I think you could work. Perfect. I think I need an agent.
I think you need a career in politics, sir, because your answers are as political as I've ever heard them.
Hey, he's got a lot of people he's got.
For me, so that I don't sound stupid. That I appreciate. He goes, yeah, that's basically right, little buddy.
He's talking to you.
Little guy. All right, Mike, why don't you throw something out there?
I will, but great. The one question I was going to ask, I think that people would be interested to know, is what does a typical week look like for you leading up to a PGA Tour event? Like, what's your week look like?
So let me back up just even for the year. So we establish a relationship with the superintendent throughout the entire year. We're always lobbing calls in, how you doing? And just, you know, I'm, on my side of things, I'm trying to establish a relationship with that superintendent. You can always, you know, hopefully ask for a little bit more or get a little bit more insight if you get to know that superintendent first versus coming in there. And I call it being demanda. Put the hat on and I demand this, I demand that. And I really don't, from a personal perspective, I don't like to use the PGA Tour says, I don't like to do that because in essence, the stuff that I'm recommending are things that we should be doing in the first place. If the idea is to make it better, why are we not trying to do that?
Right.
So I get around to a lot of golf courses. And so a lot of those things are what I try to promote. So we'll establish that relationship throughout the year. And then I make a pre-tournament visit roughly 8 weeks before the event, kind of call it kicking the tires, making sure that the things are in place. Are you getting your headspace right? Do you have the volunteers? Did you come out a winner and we've got an issue? I'm walking on it. And then I'll generate a report. And then from there, we'll put a little newsletter article in for the players to let them know, hey, everything's on track. You can expect the same thing. If you're new to the event, this is the green speech that we're hoping to achieve, you know, just trying to get out in front of things. And if there are issues, we're communicating those along the way as well. So, and then I show up a week before the event and I stay all the way through to final ball drop on Sunday.
Okay. Wow.
So that's kind of the macro level of it. And we set goals for the next season during that event. Hey, we're noticing this. Let's see if we can't, you know, those types of things.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I love that. Yeah. I think a lot of people don't realize how much really goes into a tour event like that. I think some people think that like PGA Tour just shows up 1 week and they're like, hey, we're going to play a golf tournament. Let's do this. And it's not. There's so much more that goes into it.
I mean, a year prep for next year's tournament, because there's a lot of tournaments that are at the same spot. Now, what about those that are at new courses and specifically ones that you've never had an event at before, which there have been a few as of recently that are hosting for the first time an event. What is that process like, and how do you guys prepare your players on the PGA Tour to go out? And do some of these guys, and this is a 14 part question, which I'm famous for, so I apologize.
I'm writing down the notes.
Yeah, I'm the worst, aren't I? My God.
It's so hard on yourself.
This is not a great day today for me.
You're okay.
Thomas Bastis is our guest, a PGA Tour agronomist. Thomas, the question is, and I'll get to it within 10 minutes, I promise you, is the on courses that they've never played before, you see a lot of times that they'll go out months in advance and practice on that course. How different is it in May for a event that might be in July? How different of the course conditions would they be playing, practicing on in May, as opposed to July when they actually have the tournament itself? Is it massive difference?
They can be massive. They absolutely can be massive. In some instances, what we can do in 2 weeks can be massive. I mean, if you take Muirfield Village, where we had the work day and we had, you know, the memorial, I mean, that's proof there that, you know, I think Colin Morikawa was 19 strokes different.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just interested in that tournament in general to see if you played well the first week, were you going to play well the second week? Because does the course fit your eye? Well, obviously you scored well, yes, but can you keep that momentum going?
Right.
And you know, the biggest influencer in all of that is weather. I mean, Chad hit it right on the nail with, you know, you get some wind, we're allowed to dry the golf course down, you know, more. You can, the rough doesn't stop growing. Grass does not stop growing for some reason. We try to, but so you can really influence, especially once you start increasing the frequency of how you do everything between mowing greens, mowing fairways. You can really turn it on.
Yeah.
And that's the value of the superintendent. These guys have all those bags of tricks.
Yeah.
And are really tuned into what's happening on the golf
course. Yeah. And Thomas, so greenskeepers, they can be a little quirky. So I'm sure when you come in, do they welcome your suggestions, or do you get pushback a lot of the time, or what's that look like? Do you come in and you give a suggestion here or there? What's that relationship look like when you're working with them?
Well, I'll tell you that I haven't hit it on the head all the time. I think I think trying to treat superintendents as a whole, as a single group is probably the biggest mistake. I think each one of them are very unique, and you know, they're used to being in control. And so there's absolutely nothing wrong. I think I try to continue to let them be in control. I try to just, I like to call it, I chum the water with goodness. So I throw little bits of things out there so that they have time to marinate it and you know, chew on it a little bit before they go, all right, I get where you're going now. And that's the value of being there the week before, is that, you know, we discuss things as we go along. And I really try not to use the PGA Tour must unless it's an absolute must.
Yeah.
You kind of reserve that for the, in case of emergency, break glass and pull out the, you know, all caps.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. You can now add a Stick and Hack guest to that if you really need that brute force to get something done. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like, hey, I work for the PGA Tour.
With being on a podcast.
Right. I'm PGA Tour, not just a podcast, Stick and Hack show. I'm PGA Tour, and I was on the Stick and Hack show, and watch the chips fall wherever you want them to fall. It's going to be incredible for you.
I think if I lead with Stick and Hack, I won't have to use the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Because you may not be employed by them anymore.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, I mean, I think in general, the great relationships look forward to having us back every year. Mm-hmm. You know, they enjoy having a confidant on their side. And it's not necessarily that we're trying to be on their side, but we're an advocate for what they're doing. As I say, it's like when things are good, I want to be the person that pushes that superintendent out there and saying, hey, you did this. I didn't do anything. I just happened to be there and kind of the one or two questions, you know. And then when stuff doesn't go well, when we have tournaments with, you know, like I had a golf course that lost 3 greens, you know, I want to be the one out in front of it, taking the bullets and all those types of things so that the superintendent can continue to concentrate and do what he does best. So it ebbs and flows with how the condition of the golf course is and a lot of other things.
Let me ask you this. This is not on the approved PGA Tour question list that we sent you ahead of time. However, when you say lost the greens, because we hear that a lot, especially at different courses, and they say, hey, I don't want to lose the greens. I'm not going to push them. I know, Mike, you probably know what that means. But when someone says, hey, I lost the green, what does that truly mean? What, when a course loses a green, what does that mean?
Well, in the case of this one, it was ice damage from the prior year. And they, you know, it was the grass was under, you know, several inches of ice for a number of days. And once you go past a number of days, there's nothing left. So what we ended up doing is we found, through some contacts of mine, I found another golf course that was going through a renovation, and especially at like Poa Greens, you know, there aren't nurseries out there or saw producers that produce Poa as a grass. Most times it just kind of comes in over the years and that's what you have. And then it's trained over. So to find another golf course that was tearing up all their greens, we just took the grass from there, transferred it up, and we were playing on the same surface. We were able to get out of it, but it wasn't, we had to be careful. So that's what losing greens on our end of things is. And I would say that in most instances, you're not really losing all of a green. In those other instances, when you get some disease or that sort of stuff, you know, superintendents these days are so good that they might lose portions. We might lose some hole locations. You know, if we're typically in a 4-hole rotation, you know, we might lose a spot and have to use another one. That's not the most ideal, the most challenging. So that's some of the other interpretations of losing greens.
How many, you said a couple things there about grass. How many types of grass are there truly? And are they really that different, or is this just something you guys say for job security?
Wow. you know what's funny is I've got enough job security.
Good.
There are. I need to add another graph to add more job security.
He's a professional. He's a professional, Adam.
I know that. But when you go to play in California,
know, 8 to 10.
When you play in California, you play in Florida, you play in the Midwest, there are all types of different grass, and people do tell you about it, like, hey, this is going to be different in this grass than it is somewhere else. And it's true. Yeah. I just don't know why. It's really confusing. But I know that the ball does do different things. The club does different things in the different type of grass. I find it fascinating. And I can't believe I find it fascinating, but it is. It's crazy. California grass and California courses, Florida courses, and courses here in Indiana, all very, very different.
Yeah.
Why is that, and how does that happen?
So the great thing is that if you were to step back maybe 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have that many grasses. And I mean, those grasses were there, but they weren't, and this is the science behind as well, you know, the genetic makeup of these grasses has just been so finely tuned that now we have grasses that can play golf competitively, or call it tournament type turf grass. We have a lot more choices, and those choices are that those grasses do well in such a specific area. You know, when you get into some areas that have poor water, you know, you've got grasses that'll do that. When you have grasses that have poor light, we've got grasses that do that. And you've got some that will take a lot of water, and then you got some that don't take a lot of water. You got some that don't die when it freezes, and you have some that do die when it freezes. So they all kind of like fit their little geographic areas. And there's, you know, we've broken up the United States into probably 8 major areas. And in the middle area is probably one of the tougher ones, the transition zone. That's where, you know, Chad is kind of, he's on the upper end of it, but you know, it's where you grasses are like, well, it might be too cold for this, but it can handle it. You know, so one of every 5 years you might have an oops, you know, and then you have others that you know, trend to do well all the time. So that's kind of the really cool part about the industry in the last couple of years, is the technology into just breeding turf types. So
it's awesome. See, thank you for explaining that, Thomas. I've tried many times. To
I
explain
might have walked
things
all
to,
around.
No, it's fine. I've tried to explain these things to Adam. And he just shuts me down, and he doesn't listen to me, so I'm glad.
Well,
I have no credentials, so that's probably why, but...
He's a competition agronomist.
I know.
I'm going to listen to him. Thomas Bastis is the guest PGA Tour agronomist here on the Stick and Axe Show.
So, Thomas, I heard this from a bird, that you are a drone enthusiast. Have you started using drones for golf course maintenance and applying it there?
Yes, we have.
So what are the kind of techniques that you've started to employ there? Like I'm interested. That it fascinates me because I'm kind of a tech nerd. So that's something that I'm always interested to hear about.
So the first one, the most easiest way to explain it is just communication. Sometimes just a bird's eye view over an entire fairway or an entire green gives somebody the perspective of what's going on. You know, a lot of times I'm mobile staff. Our headquarters is in Ponte Vedra, Florida. I live in California. If I'm up in Lake Tahoe and I want to explain to players, rules officials, my boss, how the golf course looks, if I'm explaining to him, like me talking to him, that's one way. But if I've done a, you know, 30-second flyover of the golf course, just an aerial, you know, CBS kind of shot, my boss is going to know exactly how well that golf course is. And he's going to go, oh, not a problem at all. You know, one of those types of things. Or if I want to tell him, hey, how the overseed looks really good, or the overseed doesn't look really good. Well, you can see that with a flyover.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to fly the whole golf course over, but I can give him a pretty good example of what's going on. So we'll do the communication on one part. Another way that I'm doing it is I'll physically map the golf course, where the drone will fly in a grid pattern over the golf course, and I call it Google Now. So it's making my own base map of, you go to think when tournament happens, there's a lot of infrastructure that goes up between rope lines, porta potties, concessions, scoreboard locations. For the rules officials, it might be penalty areas, OB lines, where the stakes were. And so I'm able to take a snapshot of the entire golf course before the tournament starts And I know exactly where everything is. You can imagine coming back to that golf course the next year, kind of going, where was that line that you did? And I've got it.
Yeah.
So I'm able to measure how big the tees are, all those types of things like that. And then you go to the third level, which is probably more of the emerging side of things, which is actually turf grass health. We're now able to fly the golf course and visually check how well grass is doing, how stressed it is. I would say it doesn't necessarily translate into what we can do on the golf course and the amount of time that we have during the tournament. We also have, you know, when can I fly that? I can't fly it during the tournament or after the tournament. There's not enough time to process the stuff before we need to make decisions. And plus, we're on the golf course so much. So I think it's coming, but it's not quite there yet.
That's fascinating.
Yep.
On that.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Cool. All right, Thomas, I'm going to ask you the same question as we in this conversation here. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Chad Mark last time. Do you find yourself constantly judging other courses that you see and or play?
Well, I'm going to say the short answer to that is absolutely. I think that most superintendents would tell you that they don't like playing their own golf course.
Yeah.
Or that when they play their golf course, it's different than when they play somebody else's golf course.
Yeah.
You know, when you play your own golf course, you're constantly making notes in your head about, God, that wasn't done and got to get that tomorrow and that sort of thing. But then when you go to somebody else's golf course, you can actually just play golf sometimes. And then you're kind of wondering how that guy is doing something. You're breaking it down and I wonder how many staff he has and what more is that? And what height is he at? You never stop. If you're in the game, you never stop thinking about the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, Thomas Bassus, the guest here on the Stick and Hack Show, PGA Tour agronomist. Thomas, thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoyed the Stick and Hack Show. I hope you enjoyed your time with us as much as we enjoyed our time with you. Continued success out there and enjoy the tour. And we look forward to, as we always do with our guests, playing golf with you sometime soon.
That's right.
So far in 31 episodes, no one's taken us up.
Hasn't happened.
But boy, we can't wait.
Come on out, I guess, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, there it is. It gets us in the middle of a pandemic when we can't travel. Yeah, Thomas, we'll see you out there, I guess.
Absolutely.
All right, there he goes. Right. Thomas Bassus, appreciate your time. PGA Tour competition agronomist. What a fascinating job and guy he was. It was a really cool interview.
Thanks, Thomas.
All right, let's move on into the clubhouse here, Mike. This is something that we call the personality test. Oh, all right, now the goal here is to see if you have a personality. No, that's not right. I apologize. The goal here is...
Well, I mean, we know the answer to that.
The goal here is to see if you are, in life, a stick or a hack
okay,
with the personality test, okay? Fine. All right, so I'm going to ask you some questions here, right? You're waiting in a long line.
Yep.
Do you chat with the person next to you or keep your eyes on your phone?
Keep my eyes on my phone.
Shocking.
Yep.
Roommates, it is great to have someone there when you get home. You'd much rather live by yourself.
I actually would go with the first one. I like to have somebody come.
She's not listening, Mike. It's okay. You can tell us the truth.
Love you, dear.
You're going on a day trip to the mountains. You plan out where to go and what to do, or you just get in the car and go?
I don't go on a day trip in the mountains, but... just get in the car and go, I guess. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. I don't think that's accurate. Your desk is usually super organized or a jumble of everything you're working on.
Oh, super organized.
Right. If you had to choose, you'd rather be an engineer or a designer?
Traditionally, I would say I was an engineer.
Right,
but
I actually
feel like I'm actually more of a designer.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That is... All right, so what are you, two hack and three stick?
I like the big picture. I don't necessarily like the, in the weed stuff.
Now, you're more interested in production and distribution or design and research?
Design and research, I would say.
For you, it's more common that your head rules your heart or your heart rules your head?
See, I'm going to go with my head.
Yeah.
Rules my heart.
No. Yeah. Why did that even take a half second?
I don't know. I was thinking about it and...
There's no reason to, except that goes to your earlier
question. They answered the question. My head was ruling. So,
You're more interested in doing things the most logical way or in the grand way of tradition?
I'm a logical guy.
Okay.
What was that? What was that?
No, what was that noise? None of these are surprising to me, except for that you don't take day trips in the mountains.
We should have had Dr. Chelsea Day do this.
We should have. You're exactly right. You've been assigned a complicated task at work. You've been assigned a complicated task at work. You like to have all the relevant information before you start, or you'll have fun discovering the details as you go.
I like to have the information before I start. Yeah.
Okay. And the last one here, you're at a party with people you don't know. Yep. Do you talk and introduce yourself? Stand at the edge of the room wishing you were at home.
I actually, you wouldn't think this, but I am a mingler, but it's usually pretty forced.
That's not mingling at all.
I have to force myself to do it is what I mean.
Okay.
It's not like, it doesn't come naturally to me.
Correct. Yeah. All right. So the results are in and you are a stick in life. As far as your personality is concerned.
Duh.
Thank God that's
What are you expecting from me?
I don't know. Oh. I have no idea.
This is exactly how you knew it would go.
Stick and Hack Show, presented by Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com. 20% off all products and shipping. Mike, what a great show for you.
You had a great show, man. Don't be so hard on yourself. Proud of you.
It's fun for me. Personality test for me coming up next. Whatever he said, I do the opposite.
Yeah.
You guys have a great week. Thanks. Proud of you, Mike. All
right. Proud of you, man. Peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.